Welcome into the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. You know, we're winding up Halloween weekend into Halloween week. Of course, when you're going into midweek, you're officially out of Halloween weekend into Halloween week. Some of you want to celebrate all month long, and hey, I don't blame you. I'm that kind of guy myself. And I figured we'd cap off this Halloween week with a classic tale that a lot of us like to tell, and one of those tales that absolutely chills you to the bone. And of course, I'm talking about a tale that emanates from Fall River, Massachusetts, a classic tale that includes 40 whacks with an axe, a tale that I think chills us all at this time of year. And it has to do with the Lizzie Borden house and Lizzie Borden herself. I, along with a few others, I think, back in 2021, saw that the Lizzie Borden house was for sale. I think we all put it on our dream list when we were shopping, but then we saw the price tag, and of course, 9.5 out of 10 of us dropped out of the bidding the minute we saw the price. And of course, you know, it's a dream to be able to go to the Lizzie Borden house and investigate. I think it's an even bigger dream to be able to own the house and be able to see it on a regular daily basis. We have a guest here with us today who gets to see it on a daily basis. And we're going to bring that guest in now. Jared Robinson is the general manager of U.S. Ghost Adventures, who owns that property now and has owned that property since 2021. Let's bring him now to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Jared, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Jared, and rather than read off the bio, let's just ask you straight outright. You know, when the house was put up for sale a little over a year ago, actually a lot more than a year ago, what made U.S. Ghost Adventures interested in picking up the property of the Lizzie Borden house? And tell us first a little bit about why the interest in the interest in that property in particular.
Yeah, sure. So U.S. Ghost Adventures is primarily a tour-based company. Mm-hmm. We offer different walking tours in 60 different cities around the U.S. And it seemed just kind of like the perfect timing to get our hands on a physical location, just to, you know, do a lot of what we already do in other cities, but to have a place where people could come and congregate and actually see the history. And that's kind of how that came to be. The owner of the company saw the house come for sale and just thought it was, you know, perfect timing. And, you know, a great opportunity for us to branch out and get into the lodging game as well. So we have overnight stays at the house as well. But to also just kind of continue what we've been doing with, you know, historically based spooky stories, mm-hmm. spooky storytelling. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do on a daily basis. And we've even expanded since then to, you know, ghost hunts and ghost tours here in Fall River as well. So, you know, it's been a really cool experience, a lot of moving parts in just a year and a half. We have another property in Gettysburg now. And we're continuing to do our ghost tours there as well, and we're going to try to do some ghost hunts there as well too. But yeah, it's been a roller coaster.
I bet. Well, let me expound a little bit on that question, and that's this: what kind of challenges? You say, you know, you, over 60 different locations in which you do walking tours. Give me the differences and challenges between a walking tour and a physical location. What different challenges do you have with the Lizzie Borden house that you wouldn't have with, say, a walking tour?
Yeah, so with the Lizzie Borden house, we're managing, you know, a 19th century historic property. It is the actual house. So I know sometimes there's some rumors that have gone around that it's not the original house or that it, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're managing a historical property that has tons of people going through it every single year. So number one, right out the gate, there's the location that we have to just make sure that we're maintaining and keeping it in the same style that it was when the Borden family lived there. So that's a huge undertaking. I mean, that's something that, you know, that's an everyday occurrence of a doorknob that's not working, you know, to, you know, a leak coming in through the roof. So that's a huge part of this process. And then also on top of it, you know, managing a staff that's a little bit different. For example, in our other cities, you know, we have tour managers and stuff like that who keep track of everything. But, you know, we have, you know, a couple of tour guides in each city that go out and do things. Whereas at the Borden house, we've got you know, 10 tour guides, you know, who do tours. We have a housekeeping team. We have, you know, our ghost tour guides, our ghost hunt guides. And then also, you know, just the basic things of just making sure that, you know, we're not going over fire code or anything like that, mm-hmm. you know. So there's all those little tiny things that make it a little bit different, but make it a little bit more interesting, you know. And make it, you know, a very interesting job.
Oh, sure. You know, in the past, with past staff that have been there at the Lizzie Borden house, they've almost taken more than a liking to the house. They've also almost caught the personality of the house and brought it to their hearts and to themselves like a member of the family. I guess I would ask you this, Jared, in your stay there as general manager, have you taken to the house kind of like that? Has it become more than just a place of work for you?
Yeah, so I actually have an interesting backstory with the house, too. I'm from Fall River. I'm born and raised here. And I only joined U.S. Ghost Adventures about 3 weeks after they purchased the house.
Okay.
But my interesting story with the house is my family was part of the team who opened the house in 1996 with the McGinns, who were the original owners when it was converted into a business. So, I mean, my aunt Michelle managed the house. My aunt Rochelle gave tours. She picked out a lot of the wallpaper and the carpeting based off crime scene photos. She painted a lot of the portraits inside of the house, the ones of Lizzie, of Emma. My grandmother, my meme, the matriarch of our family, she cooked breakfast and did housekeeping. So for me, I mean, if like, I have a lot of memories of being a child and staying home from school. And you know what we would do on those days is we'd have to go stay with Auntie Michelle at the Lizzie Borden house.
Wow.
You know, which could entail, you know, hanging out in the basement. Or at the time, there was a printing press attached to the house and hanging out in there. Or sometimes my cousins and I would hide under the beds and grab my aunt's feet as she came through. So the connection for, yeah, oh gosh, if someone did that to me today, I would pass right out. It would be terrible. It would be awful. But so my connection to the house has always been there. And when the house sold, my family, for the first time, when the house sold in, I believe it was 2004
yeah.
to Donald Woods, and was then managed by Leanne Wilbur, a longtime manager here at the house.
Yep.
My family just kind of went different ways. There was a lot of health issues going on. My mom had cancer. My grandfather had cancer.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of just impacted. It was just weird timing. So they left, and I really didn't come back to the house from maybe 2004 till 2021.
Oh my God.
So for me, it was kind of like a homecoming. Really.
Yeah.
It was like a return to my childhood and kind of thinking about some of those memories and, I don't know, validating some of the spooky things that happened to me as a kid there. But also just kind of like carrying on maybe a legacy. I don't know if it's like that, but that connection's always been there for me. And, I'll tell you from the staff who have carried over, uh-huh. we have some staff members who have been there for 10 years now.
Okay.
They're still passionate about it. And then we have some tour guides that started 3 months ago and they get that same passion as well. You know, they've added me as Facebook friends and I'll see that they have they're posting photos of them in costume. They're talking about the case on their own time. So this is a very long-winded way to say, yes, I definitely take this home with me every time I go back to my house. But it's been in my heart since I was born.
There's no such thing as a long-winded here, Jared. And no, that's a very eloquent answer, which you've left a lot out there for us to chew on, a lot for us to go down as far as alleys and question line. So I'm glad you put that out there. Let's start with childhood experiences, because and then we'll go from there. Let's talk a little bit about your childhood with the Lizzie Borden house and maybe some experiences there. What paranormal experiences do you remember from your childhood and from days where you would go over there, you know, from school?
So when I was a kid, and right out the gate, a lot of the stuff that kind of came back to me were memories of stories. So, like, I remember my Auntie Michelle talking about a housekeeper who had made a bed, turned around to grab some linens from a cabinet, and then turned back around to see a fresh imprint inside the bed, and that housekeeper left and ran out. And a lot of those memories came back of secondhand happenings. But the day I came in for my interview, and this is probably going to sound, sometimes I don't love telling these stories sometimes, but I don't know, it feels so weird when you're talking about yourself as an 8-year-old, you know?
Yeah.
So there was this one thing that happened to me that I think I repressed and never thought about it until I walked in for my job interview.
Okay.
I had interviewed for the job at the I think it was like the last week of May. And it was actually my first time in the house in almost 2 decades.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the layout of the house was kind of gone. I remembered what the printing press looked like. I remembered like this alleyway in between the printing press and the house itself. But a lot of like the memory of the layout of the house was gone. I couldn't quite exactly remember where things were. Certain things were in different places than I remembered.
Okay.
But this one memory came back, and it came like flooding back to me the second I walked into the house. And it was of being in the basement. And I don't remember exactly why I was down there. I think it was just that my aunt had a tour going on, and it was kind of like, hey, there's some things going on, just kind of hang out down here. But what I do remember very vividly of this story, and it literally came back to me the second I walked into the house for the interview, was I remember, I don't know if you've ever seen like the layout of the house or the layout of the basement.
Mm-hmm.
I came down the staircase that's at the back of the house, and I took a left and I looked straight ahead, and you basically have a full length view of the basement from down there at the bottom of the stairs.
Okay.
And I remember seeing a figure in black, which I think was a woman, walk across very slowly all the way at the end of the basement and walk down towards where the handleless hatchet was found. And that was also like the boiler room essentially nowadays.
Yep.
And that memory like literally came back flooding to me, but it was so incredibly detailed and vivid.
Hmm.
And at the end of the interview, I didn't know if I was getting the job or not. And I asked the owner of the company who I was interviewing with, I said, Lance, I don't know if I'm getting this job or not, but is there any way we can go down to the basement? Because like, at this point, I didn't know if I'd ever be back at the house again.
Sure.
And I just wanted to see that and see it. And you know when you have those memories of being like 8 years old somewhere and you go back and it's like way bigger than you expected or way smaller than you imagine,
right,
or it's completely different. This memory was so perfect and pristine that to me it just validated everything. I mean, the layout of the basement was perfect. Where the brick wall was and the brick entry to the left was perfect. Where the brick fireplace would come down in the basement, it was perfect. I mean, it was like, it was stunning that memory, I hadn't thought about it. I must have repressed it, or I don't know, just kind of cast it out of my memory. And coming back to the house, it was like perfect.
Really?
Just absolutely perfect. It was exactly how I remembered it.
So did it feel more like a flashback than a memory?
Oh, that's a super interesting thought. Because the way it came flooding back to me, all in that moment, that's a really, really interesting thought. I never quite thought of it that way. To me, I kind of thought of it as like a repressed memory that was unlocked,
mm-hmm,
by walking into the house. But to think of it kind of as a flashback, and almost like my 8-year-old brain, like I tapped into that for a moment.
Yeah.
That's a really, really interesting thought, because that's how vivid it really was. I never thought of it that way, but that's super interesting.
You know, it's interesting too that you connected so quickly to the house, almost like you belong, you know, like it was almost like a foreshadowing that you belong there, that you're not just walking in for the interview, you're walking in to introduce yourself or reintroduce yourself to the house.
And, wow.
And that's just its way of saying welcome back.
Whew, you just gave me chills.
It
was such a meaningful place to my family growing up. Mm-hmm. And they loved it so, so much, growing up. And I know it was really hard for them to move on from it. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's a really funny, like, I have an emotional connection to that. Like, yeah, maybe so. And as you can imagine, any time you're transitioning new ownership, especially with a fan base that is so passionate about the story, you have some, there's always going to be some of those doubts that creep in. You know, someone's going to be upset with, you know, how we change something or the website change or something like that. And that stuff comes creeping in because you don't want to let people down. You understand how much they're passionate about it. And there were so many times where, you know, I would, you know, have conversations with people and I would never take a high horser and just say like, hey, I was here when I was a kid too, mm-hmm. you know? But there were times where it was just like, I just wanted people to know that, like, I love this house too. You know, I have an emotional, deep connection to this house that goes back to my early, some of my earliest childhood memories. So, to think about it in the sense of like, wow, maybe this is exactly where I was meant to be.
I think so, you know, and you bring up an interesting point, and that is, you know, and let's be curt, let's be frank with each other. You know, Leanne really was a passionate caretaker of the Lizzie Borden house, and she did pass away. And it was, and when she passed away, I think it really hit people where they live. And so there is a lot of passion with that community, with that fan community of the Lizzie Borden house, that they are concerned as to whose hands it's put into next. And I think when it was announced that U.S. Ghost Adventures bought the property, there might have been some trepidation. Is that fair to say?
Oh, that's more than fair to say. Okay, absolutely. Sure.
And I think, in all fairness, Jared, I think with you being named GM now, I think that a little of that trepidation can be put aside because there is some history there now. There is,
And I think for me, my goal is never to deny what Leanne did. I mean, Leanne loved this place. There's mm-hmm. no denying that. You can't deny it. Right. This was her life in many ways. You mm-hmm. know, I think she lived on the property. You know, so like this was mm-hmm. like this is a massive undertaking to, you know, just follow in those steps and to go on to that. And I think you're right when. And even just so as simple as like the name of the company, U.S. Ghost Adventures, it can be kind of, it was misleading to some people in the sense of like, oh, are they just going to do ghost stuff there? And, you know, I've had a lot of conversations with people and just kind of saying, you know, on any given occasion, outside of like, you know, and basically any given occasion, we're operating historical based tours mm-hmm. for, let's just say we have 10 tours going out in a day. 8 of those tours are historical based tours where we're just telling the story of what happened at this house. Whether it's the murders, whether it's, you know, the prehistory, post history, after the murders, that'll be 8 out of the 10 tours. And then the ghost tour itself, it's a ghost tour, but it's a historical tour as well. We walk around the neighborhood. We talk about St. Mary's Cathedral. We talk about the great fires in Fall River. We talk about, you know, it's kind of got a spookier flair to it. Mm-hmm. But it's historically based as well. And then the ghost hunts at night are really for the, you know, the ghost hunting crowd. Okay. You know, so, but if you look at that day-to-day operations, 8 out of our 10 tours are purely history-based. You know, so
sure.
I think, again, when you look at something like U.S. Ghost Adventures taking over at the Lizzie Borden house, I think some people kind of saw that as, all right, they're going to get rid of the history element of it. Yeah. And I'll just tell you right out the gate, that was never our goal. It's never been my goal. Actually, that's what I went to college for, was history.
Okay. Yeah.
So I definitely, I'll tell you, when I told a couple of my professors what I was doing, they were like, really? But you know, that's always been my goal, to preserve the history and also make it a place that, you know, historians can come and have a good experience, true crime enthusiasts can come and have an interesting experience, and the paranormal community can come out and have a great experience as well. That's kind of my goal with this whole thing, is that, you know, we don't need to fight with each other, any of these groups. We're all like, the whole goal of it is to preserve this house and make sure that it stays a place that we can all visit and check out. So let's all be friends.
I like that. With that note, let's take our break. When we come back, let's delve a little bit into the paranormal side of things, being we're a paranormal show. We have a true crime show on Tuesday. We can tie a little bit of that into that as well. We'll do that a little bit later in the program as well. And we'll get into the story of Lizzie Borden a little bit. But I want to find out a little bit about some paranormal stories since you've taken over the property and some experiences that might have happened, even with some of the newer workers. I'm interested to see if some of the newer workers have had their paranormal bells rung. We'll put it that way. Since you've been on the property, Jared Robinson is our guest. He is the general manager for U.S. Ghost Adventures of the historic Lizzie Borden House. When we come back, we'll talk more about some of the newer paranormal adventures over there at the Lizzie Borden House. Folks, if you want to book lodging over there at the Lizzie Borden House, if you want to book a ghost tour or a ghost hunt, we have a link in the description of this program in which you can do so and contact them. Also, there's a shop online where you can get official Lizzie Borden Museum merchandise. So that's all available right online. We've got that link in the description of this program. When we come back, more with Jared Robinson here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Our guest is Jared Robinson. He is the GM of the Lizzie Borden House for U.S. Ghost Adventures. And we are talking about the Lizzie Borden House today. We're talking about some of the changes that they've done over there, which really isn't much as far as change goes, Jared, as we've pretty much come up with from the first part of the program. Let's talk a little bit about some of the paranormal experiences that some of the staff have undergone since the takeover there in 2021. You said you have brought in some newer employees. There have been some employees that have been with you for over the last 10 years. There's been some newer staff such as yourself. Although you're by all means not new, you've been around since you were a kid. But with some of the newer staff, I'm interested to know what kind of experiences that they've had since they've stepped onto the property.
Yeah, of course. Happy to share this. I also want to share, maybe I'll do it afterwards or in the chat or something. Sure. We actually captured a really interesting experience of two of our guests. And we have a YouTube link for it too. I'll share that with you too, so you can check that out. It was really, really interesting.
Oh yeah.
It's probably one of the most captivating pieces of evidence I've ever seen.
Okay.
But yeah, when it comes down to some of our newer staff, Rick is one of our new tour guides. He joined on this year, actually at the end of last year. We met him because he played Uncle John for the reenactment last year.
Okay.
And he came on, and it was really funny. We were sitting in the gift shop one day, and he looks over out. We have a barn there where our gift shop is, and there are these big, tall windows, and you can see down the driveway. And he's looking out there, and I can notice he saw something kind of strange. And I was like, that's a little bit odd, but I didn't really think anything of it. But then later on, he kind of came to me and said, Jared, I got to tell you, I saw something really weird outside. And he said he had seen a man in Victorian style clothing, all black. I mean, top hat, Victorian style clothing. Full jacket, just kind of walk at the end of the driveway and walk to the front of the house. And saw that. And he said it was like a very, very odd thing for him to see. And he has also seen a shadow kind of figure in the basement as well. His version of it isn't as clear as mine. But what's very interesting about it is I separately, and I don't really like, I'm a little bit quieter, I guess, at work. I don't often talk about my experiences like that. And before that, I guess anyone really found out about that experience. Another manager in the company and one of our housekeepers were down in the basement, and they both saw a black shadow figure as well.
Really?
In a similar area as well. And what was really funny about it is the housekeeper, Summer, said, "Oh, that's my friend," essentially. Like, she's just started this year as well, and she's had this shadow figure in the basement as well that she's kind of just accepted as like a buddy down there, I guess. She said they don't really bother her, and they kind of just do their business while she's down there, you know, folding laundry or, you know, putting together bed sets or something like that. So the shadow figure in the basement has been a very common occurrence. Even another housekeeper, Rhonda, who's been there a little bit before I was there, you know, she mentioned some kind of figure in the basement. Her story, her telling of it, was looking through, we have some brick walls down there, and there's a couple of holes in some of them. Mm-hmm. And she said she looked through one and saw someone looking back. Ooh. On the other end of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So hers is a lot more detailed than a shadow figure, and hers seemed to be a little bit more nefarious, and threatening than the rest of us. Like, even as a kid, I don't remember that memory being threatening. Yeah. It was just powerful. It was a very powerful feeling. But I don't remember being, and I was a terrified kid. Like, okay. If you look at pictures of me at Disney World at like 10 years old, I'm crying in every single picture.
Oh no.
Yeah, I was one of those kids. So for me to not like cry in that experience, it says something.
Well, yeah, that it does. Well, you know, let me ask you this question, Jared, and this may seem like an odd question, but in order to work at the Lizzie Borden house, do you have to have somewhat of a paranormal callus? Do you have to be, easily, well, I shouldn't say easily startled. You can startle, but not be easily scared.
I think that's fair. I do think that's fair. And I would say I'm probably, my threshold has gotten a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But there have been times where, you know, I've been filling in for a housekeeping shift and been on the third floor of the house and gotten so spooked that I needed to kind of take a breather outside for a little bit, you know, just some kind of overwhelming energy. And I'm not going to say I turned around and saw an apparition standing there looking right at me, but it was just an overwhelming kind of energy that kind of told me I don't want to be up here right now. So my threshold's a little bit less than others.
Okay.
I think to work there, you do need to have a bit of a threshold for this. But I will tell you, I'm probably the biggest scaredy cat of everyone who works there. Okay. And I seem to do okay.
Because much like your housekeeper, I find it interesting when people say, "Oh, that's just my buddy," and they can take a spirit that you don't know if it's malevolent or not, and attach a kind of a fun little misnomer to it, or a fun little, "Hey, that's my buddy, that's my pal," or you can take it to heart, and you know, especially with the history of the house.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not a bright and cheery history, you know.
No.
It's not something where you could just assume that whatever it is you're dealing with is going to have a buddy mentality. You know?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think I've learned to kind of be a little bit more in tune with my, you know, feelings. I didn't, like, as much as I had this childhood at the Lizzie Borden house, I never really, like, watched paranormal shows, ghost hunting shows. I never quite got into that too much. So I kind of missed out, I think, on a lot of that. That learning of like, all right, it's not always just going to be you're going to see something. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're going to have a drastic mood change. You're going to have temperature changes. You know, all this stuff that I'm learning now, or I've learned in the last, you know, year and a half. But I've learned that even when I hear something or maybe see something out of the corner of my eye or something, I have to kind of be in tune with how I'm feeling in that moment. And I'll tell you, sometimes like I hear something and I can't explain it, but I feel like an overwhelming like calmness still. And that tells me like, all right, this isn't a spirit that means me any harm. Mm-hmm. I don't need to feel worried. But there have been moments where like I've been, like I said, I've been upstairs doing housekeeping on the third floor and felt that overwhelming kind of feeling of dread kind of come over me. So I think maybe Summer and her friend in the basement, you know, I think if Summer was feeling threatened, I think she probably wouldn't call them a friend.
Sure, sure.
So I think she's probably a little more into, you know, she's probably like seeing this shadow figure and kind of in tune with herself and thinking, all right, they don't mean me any harm. That's what I'm guessing.
Yeah, oh, very much so, very much so. You brought up something interesting there in that you hadn't watched too many paranormal shows before you'd gone back to the Lizzie Borden house. Let me ask you this. Do you take your work home with you now? Do you watch more paranormal shows now? Or do you tend to want to stay away from it once you get home?
I think that's a good question, too, because it's opened me up a lot more than in the past. And it's never that I was like a skeptic by any means. Like I don't think I've ever been a skeptic of it. I don't think I just had the interest, really. But I've definitely done a lot more reading, a lot more studying, and I genuinely find that I am more interested in it now than I ever was. I think you just kind of have to be, like, you're surrounded by it. I've had the pleasure of hosting ghost hunts over the last couple of years, you know, with some really cool gear and trying out some of that stuff and meeting other ghost hunters from around the country. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to do a valid tour, you have to understand this stuff. Sure. I don't profess to be, some people are more sensitive than others. And some people, I've met some people on our tours who are mediums, and kind of have more of like a gateway to that side, that realm. I don't profess to have that. Mm-hmm. So for me, my experience with the ghost hunting has always been like, I'm going to show you how to use these tools. And I'm going to set you up in the house and I can give you background on rooms and I'm going to let you do the work, the hands-on experience of this, because that's where it works the best. You know, I can't manifest this stuff like some other people can. Other people seem to have a connection to it. So I've gone more down the hole of like learning about the technology and bringing that home with me and learning about, you know, the different tools that we can use to try to track and investigate. And of course, that's probably included, you know, I've watched a little bit more on YouTube of some other people who do this. But I would say I'm definitely a lot more into it now. And I think some of it is, you know, just practical. I want to make sure I'm giving people a good experience whenever I lead a tour.
Yep.
But some of it also is just like, yeah, I'm kind of interested in this now.
Yeah, I gotcha. You brought up an interesting group of people that I want to address on certain ghost tours. And I want to get your impression as to what type of experiences you've had with psychics and mediums on these different ghost tours. Now, I'm interested to see how much do they get the same amount of information as everybody else on the tour. Two, we all know this is a very highly publicized house, so there's not a lot of information that they haven't got that the general public hasn't got. So you've already front-loaded a psychic or a medium when they've come into the house. And I guess three, have you ever gotten something that's so wildly out there that you yourself have gone, I don't know that that's true to what you've heard or seen or is in with the mythos that is the house itself? And could you tell us about any of those experiences where you just got something from a psychic or medium and you went, I don't know that that's true to what we know?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And, you know, this house obviously attracts a lot of people who are a bit more sensitive. And people will express that in different ways. So some people will outright say to me, hi, I'm a medium, and I speak with the dead. Mm-hmm. And I'm not you know, I think I've had enough experiences in the house with people who have claimed this, and I think a lot of times it's pretty valid and pretty accurate. But I've had other people that have come to me and just said, hey, I'm a little bit more sensitive to this stuff. So I think there's kind of like a spectrum of like people who are sensitive to this stuff.
Okay.
Into the paranormal, into the other realms. And most of the people who have come to the house have been, what's the best word for this? I think they've been like subtle about it. Like there hasn't really been, you know, these ghost hunts are kind of more group oriented, you know, but sometimes you can kind of break off into your own groups and stuff like that. I haven't had any experiences myself where someone tries to be like the center of attention or something
okay,
like
that's
that.
Good. That's good.
And try to like gather people around and be like, oh, I'm speaking to people, like, you know, I haven't had anything like that. Everyone's been very respectful. And I will say 90% of the mediums who come through on our ghost hunts and stuff, most of them are just like respectful of the spirits who are still at the house.
Okay.
And they don't want to attract too much attention. It's not like what I imagine some of the TV personalities or something to be like.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really want to attract that attention so much. There's definitely been maybe one or two experiences of someone being like, there's someone standing right behind you and they have a hatchet in their hand. And I'm kind of like,
sure.
Yeah. I'm kind of like, I want to be respectful of you, and I'm going to, and I am willing to do that. It's only happened, like I said, maybe one or two times. And literally, I mean, someone has said that those exact words to me. And I kind of, in those moments, just said, all right, I'm going to, you know, respect them. I will leave the room right now, you know, if I need to.
Yeah.
Because again, I don't know what they're seeing. You know, I come right out and say, I'm not the most sensitive person to this stuff. I'm just not.
Right.
But that has happened a couple of times where someone has told me that someone is standing right behind me with a hatchet. and I'm like, I don't know what to make of that. And that's okay.
it's not like it's a physical hatchet and it's going to hit you in the head. That's for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But I'll tell you this much. Almost everyone who comes through on the ghost hunts, they come in with an open mind, and their goal is to have some communication, to detect, and to respect. Mm-hmm. Like, to come into the house and not, you know, try to rile the spirits up. And that's one of the first things I say to people, too, especially, like, younger people who are just, like, trying to get a spook. Like, I say, like, there's no jump scares here. Mm-hmm. We might sit in silence for 2 hours tonight.
Sure.
And, like, that's what this is. So, you know, sometimes there's some crowd control of like a younger guy coming in or something who's like yelling or something.
Oh,
and I'm like, hey, like, that's not what we're trying to do here. We're trying to be respectful. The spirits are people.
Yeah.
So it's like, we want to talk to them at a normal level, like you would with anybody. So I always discourage people from, you know, trying to rile them up or yell at them. I think there's a healthy level of talking about the crime or their experience that might elicit some more emotional responses, which we found. Like, I've talked about, you know, the having the wakes inside the parlor
before.
To see how Andrew and Abby felt about that.
Okay.
To see how they felt about their peers coming through their house after such a, you know, a crime like that. I've even talked about, you know, asking Andrew how he felt about, I mean, being murdered in such a terrible way. But again, there's a balance between that and then walking through the house and be like, hey, Andrew Borden, where are you? Which I've seen some people try to do, but like I said, 90% of the people are coming in there. They're respectful. They understand what's going on. And very few people walk in and kind of go like, oh, I know what happened. I just talked to a spirit and they told me who murdered Andrew and who murdered Abby. You know, that doesn't really happen. I think there, like I said, there's been a couple of those scenarios where someone's walked in and told me outright, you know, I see the murderer behind you with the hatchet. And that's fine.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
That's fine. But like I said, most people are coming here. They're respectful. They're like us. They want to know what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can get a little glimpse into that or a little bit of communication, that's mostly what everyone's there to do. That's their goal.
It's kind of like the statute of limitations has run out, so no matter who you see with the hatchet behind me, that's great.
Yeah, exactly. If it's Uncle John, if it's, you know, Bridget, Lizzie, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to know what's really funny, though, and I'm sorry, this is even more long-winded now.
Oh, go ahead.
A lot of people talk about not detecting Lizzie at the house.
Really?
That happens a lot. And that's a really interesting trend. I don't know if it's, again, I don't know if it's the historical aspect coming into their brain, telling them like, oh, Lizzie wouldn't want anything to do with this house. I mean, she moves to Maplecroft. She does move on from this house.
Yeah.
But it does happen fairly frequently, even from a lot of people who never... like really don't know the story, don't know that she moved out of the house afterwards. It does happen a lot. A lot of people detect Andrew, a lot of people detect Abby, people talk about Bridget, people talk about Emma, people talk about the two children who were murdered next door. I mean, like, that stuff comes up quite often, but it is funny, there is a trend where a lot of people don't seem to detect Lizzie at the house.
You've
talked about the house before. Have you heard that before as well?
I have, but I'm trying to remember, and I have to ask Jeff Belanger about this, if he has any record of anybody who's caught Lizzie herself. Either Tim Weisberg or Jeff Belanger would know if there's actually been someone who's caught an EVP. Because I want to say it's either Bill Chappell, Tim Weisberg or Jeff Belanger may know of someone who's caught an actual EVP of Lizzie.
Oh, wow.
But I'm not quite sure. Don't quote me on it. I know there's one of Abby. I know Jeff knows of one or has of one of Abby.
Yep.
But not, don't quote me about one of Lizzie. But I know Lizzie that is common that people don't get anything of Lizzie. Yeah.
It happens all the time with the ghost hunts. I mean, a lot of people just walk out of there saying, like I said, they sense Andrew's spirit, and kind of Andrew would make sense to me.
Yeah.
Andrew is proud of the house. He loved the house. I mean, there's even some possible evidence that he even helped build the house, which is really interesting. You know, so that would make sense to me. Abby would make sense to me, maybe just kind of being like almost trapped there. But also like, loving the house as well too, I'm sure.
Right.
But I guess like it does seem to be a common trend. But even though that, like, even just knowing that a recording of Lizzie doesn't quite jump out at you either, it does kind of hint at like the fact that a lot of people don't quite detect her there.
Yeah. It's not common. I know that.
Yeah. And it would make sense. I mean, for her in the afterlife to kind of like really cut ties as much as possible.
Yeah.
But I guess it does make it more interesting when people do get Lizzie, you know, if they channel her, if they get an EVP or if they get anything from her, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. It's very interesting indeed. You know, speaking of that and not appearing in certain places or not being in certain places, the one thing I was going to ask you at the end of the psychic question was this. And it's not so much psychic as it is, and I've seen this a million times, Jared, especially at the Queen Mary. You have people that are going to send spirits to the light. They always do this with Jackie, the ghost in the pool. It's, you know, I think Jackie's been crossed over 9 million times since 2006, yet she's still there in the pool. Do you cross Abby over, Andrew over, or... Do you have people that come in and oh, I said a prayer and she passed gracefully into the light and things are fine? Do you get those interactions there at the Lizzie Borden house?
I've heard a lot of people talk about it, specifically with the children, the spirits of the children, and sending them over. This is the fact of the matter is, like, people are still spending the night and still having the same experiences. So it's like, I don't think they were successful if it did happen, if they did try to cross them over, or maybe it just doesn't work the same way they think it does.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, maybe it's not as simple as like, you can just like cross over and then you're gone and see you later. Maybe it's a little bit more fluid than that. And it's more coming and going or something. I don't really know. And again, I'm not out here to discredit people. That's not my goal in the slightest, or judge people. Especially, like I said, coming from someone who's not just naturally as sensitive to this stuff as some other people are. But I've heard stories of people, you know, ridding the spirits of the house and coming out, but it doesn't seem to have worked.
No, not in the slightest. I'm curious as to how much you believe, how much of the activity there at the Borden House is residual and how much is active?
The amount of times I get people that come in and go like, hey man, I never believed in this stuff. I was really staying here for the true crime element. But I got to tell you, this happened to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I heard this last night. I would say I believe probably 75% of it, and where it's not necessarily someone's imagination interfering with them or their fears interfering with them, just because the amount of times I have people come up to me like very quietly and subtly and kind of just like telling me, hey, I had this experience, and they're not trying to like make a show of it, you know? Yeah. They're not trying to you know, get their 5 minutes of fame or something like that. A lot of times they're asking me like, have you ever experienced that? Or have you ever seen something like this? So I honestly do believe a lot of the guests who are coming in, they're truly having an experience.
Okay.
I really am willing to bet that. I think the house, it's undeniable that there's something going on there, that there is an energy there. And just just the numbers alone of people that come to me that are, like, are very, I hate to put it this way, but are very normal people that come to me and talk to me about this stuff and talk to me about their experiences. And they do it in such a way that it's genuine and it's heartfelt and it's not like just trying to add to the allure of it or whatever. That I do believe most of it to be true, to be honest.
You said before you had a guest experience you wanted to talk about that was kind of off the charts a little bit. What happened with that?
Yeah, we had a mother and a daughter spending the night, and there was like an hour period between they had just wrapped up an experience. They were going to be doing the ghost hunt that night, but they had about an hour to kind of just like walk around. And they walked into the dining room, which I've actually had a lot of experiences in there. Mm-hmm. I'll actually tell another one that was really, really interesting.
Sure.
But I'll continue with this one. They walk into the dining room, and I'll share a video with you too, so you can watch it.
Yeah.
It's only 40 seconds long.
Okay.
They walk into the dining room, they're kind of just looking around, and the lights go out. Now, the lights are on a motion sensor. Okay. So if you walk into the room, the lights will come on for you. And they're in the room walking around, so the lights go off, and they register that there's motion detection in the room. So they walk out, they walk back in, the lights aren't coming on. It's kind of weird. Then slowly into the frame, you can see a closet door start opening up and moving into the frame. And there's nothing behind this door. It's a small closet in the dining room. And it starts opening up, and all of a sudden the daughter notices it, points it out to her mom. She pushes the door shut, and the lights come on in that moment. It's a really interesting thing. Do you want me to share that with you right now in the chat?
Yeah, actually, you know what? Send me, do you have a link for it? If you have a link for it, just send it to my email, and then I'll post it in the description of the show so that everybody can get a look at the video.
Yeah, it's one of those just kind of like interesting things that you always hope to capture, and it doesn't happen that often, as I'm sure you're
absolutely
aware.
Yeah. So that everybody then can get a good look at the video and see what we're talking about here.
Yeah. And then let us know what you think of it. I mean, it was really interesting. I just sent it over to you, and they were cool people too. Like, they were like, yeah, we, didn't expect this to happen, you know?
Yeah.
But that dining room, there's something interesting that happens in there every now and then.
Okay.
I was in there, and it happens with the lights, too, and just technology lights, all that stuff. I was filling in for, managing a small business like this. You fill in for every single thing. So whether it's ghost tours, ghost hunts, house tours, housekeeping, you got to be ready to do anything. I became a plumber since starting here at this job.
Well, that means you're getting your own ghost hunting show.
They would. Oh my God, that would be hysterical. I was doing a ghost tour, and I gave everyone on the tour. I think we had like 15 people on the tour. It wasn't a huge group, and I gave them all EMF detectors, just because I was like, it was one of my first ghost tours. I wanted to make sure that it was still a good experience for them because I wasn't quite comfortable in it yet. I knew all the information, but I wanted to make sure they had a good experience. So I gave everyone an EMF detector for the tour, and we got into the dining room, and I'm talking about, it's in there. I was talking about, the autopsies. And I get into Abby's autopsy a little bit, and everybody on one side of the room experiences at the exact same time a spike in their EMF detectors. I mean, it's reading red, like absolute max. And I'm like, ah, that's kind of interesting. I carry on a little bit, spike again, everybody on that side of the room. Then the lights go out, and I'm like, we're all just standing there in the dark, and it's pitch black. And I kind of tell everyone, all right, maybe something's going on with the – we have – I have an app that I can at least test and turn on lights or turn them off.
Sure.
So I go to the app, and I'm trying to turn the lights back on, and I can't get them back on.
Ooh.
So as soon as we go to leave the room, the lights come back on. And I'm like – It just happened just after these spikes in everyone's EMF detectors. And I'm like, that is super weird. And a week later, I do like the exact same tour, same moment. And I didn't give everyone EMF detectors on this one, so I really regret that. But lights go out, can't get them back on. Everyone thinks I'm playing a trick on them, that this is some kind of jump scare. I pull out the app. I'm showing them, like, I can't get the lights back on. This is not me. Flipping the actual switch itself to try to get them back on, which automatically will bring them back on.
Yeah.
And again, as soon as we leave the room, lights come back on.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. This technology and this house, I think this follows me home. This part follows me home a little bit because I did a radio interview for truckers around the country. Okay. I did this, everything's blurring together, so I'm so sorry, but
no, it's fine.
I think it was 2 days ago.
Okay.
And we're doing this radio interview, and I'm talking about, like, yeah, sometimes technology doesn't want to work with me. Sometimes we get weird things that happen. And the person who's like the operator behind it comes on and goes, hey guys, I just have to let you know, almost every time Jared goes to talk, the song Magic by Pilot comes through the radio, like, whoa, 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 it's magic. It kept cutting me off for 3 minutes of the interview. It kept cutting me off, and I'm like, that stuff just seems to be happening to me.
That's funny.
Everywhere I go now.
That's funny. That's...
So if we get some weird interference here, like, I'm telling you, it's been following me.
That's funny. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere in this recording there's an EVP somewhere, and if we, you know, we'll probably get somebody who will report it.
Oh, that would be awesome.
I'm sure. Because a lot of times I'll go through and I'll edit the program. And I'll think, okay, there's nothing in the line file, nothing. And somebody will go, Tim, at 2127, there's this voice. And I'll go, there was no voice. And I'll go right back to the file, and there it is. There's a little voice right there. And I'll go,
wow,
son of a bitch, look at that.
Wow. Well, I'll give everyone a disclaimer. My two dogs, my rescues, my Zoe and Otis, have been here, and they make some weird noises. So
yeah, there's been a little jingle jangle in the background, but it's no big deal. And like I told you before the interview, I don't mind ambient noise or anything like that. So, and in fact, when we do Supernatural News on Wednesdays, Beer City Bruiser, who's my co-host, he's got his pup, Ziggy Star Pup, in the background who barks and jingles and jangles and is a part of the show. So it's no big deal. So
I love the David Bowie reference.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly.
So love it.
So it's not a huge deal. So Ziggy's part of the show. So it's not a not a huge deal.
Well, if you have me back one day, you know, I'll introduce everyone to Zoe and Otis too.
Exactly. See, that's why I say it's no big deal if Zoe and Otis are part of the show.
Awesome.
So you know, I'm curious as far as the house goes itself. Now, I mean, obvious. Oh, you know, you mentioned bringing things home. This is what I was going to my next point, and what I was going to throw in. You had mentioned being part of the interviews and things, kind of making themselves known as part of your interviews. Now, being that you do have that tie from when you were younger and when you were little, and you have the familial tie there. Do you feel like maybe some of those spirits do make an occasional appearance at your house? And is there, I don't want to say not a malevolent tie, but more of a familial tie with the spirits at the Lizzie Borden house when it comes to you and your family?
I would say there's no malevolent tie. Mm-hmm. Even though I've had some of those experiences where I said, like, I felt like overwhelming dread. And that's gotten me to leave the house. Nothing has felt to me like threatening. At least nothing that like really jumps out to me. And I think my family would agree. Like I don't think any of them feel that way either. That connection to the house, like bringing it home with me, I can't say for certain that like, that it's someone from the house coming with me here. Okay. It makes itself interesting when, like I said, I'm doing a radio interview at my house, and we're talking about the Borden story and we're getting interference like that.
Okay.
It makes me think that it's something coming with me, and maybe it's, I can't say for certain. I definitely can't say for certain. I will say that there is a familial like connection at the house that's I kind of sense, that like it is that kind of feeling that we're familiar with each other too. And it's like, this is something that I am used to, and I think they're used to me and they're okay with me, because I don't get the sense that I'm unwelcomed.
Okay.
Like I don't get that sense that I'm personally unwelcomed. Even though on ghost hunts, like I've had some guests tell me that like through their spirit boxes or something, like I've left a room and they've gotten like a reading, you know, whether it's their, whether it's like the Oculus or, I think it's the Oculus, not the Oculus. I'm sorry. That's Facebook's, thing. Ovulus. Sorry. Yeah. Whether it's gotten like a reading that like, as I've walked out of a room and said like jerk, you know, that's happened a couple of times. I don't take it to heart or too personally, because there's been plenty of other times where it's just said like Jared or something, you know, and just gotten my name. but yeah, I don't think I sense anything malevolent. I think it's nothing nefarious. As Zoe makes a hysterical noise. Yeah, I can't say it's ever felt that way to me, that it's like evil or anything like that. I think there's been some feelings of dread, and that would make sense to me. I mean, it was such a horrific crime that there would be some dread lingering there.
Sure.
But yeah, I can't say malevolent. I don't think so.
Do you think, and this, I don't know why this pops up in my head, but do you have a past family member that's passed away that worked at the house that might be maybe passing these messages to you or might be interfering in the interviews while you're at home?
I don't have, oh man, this stuff gets me going. I'm sorry. My grandmother's still alive. My mom, who helped out, even though she had cancer, she's still alive. My auntie Rochelle's still alive. Auntie Misha's still alive. But my grandfather, my Pepe, he passed almost 2 decades ago now. Jeez. He played Andrew on some of the early video recordings.
Okay.
Like some of the TV interviews, you know, where they would do kind of like a reenactment or something.
Yep.
My grandfather, he would play Andrew. He, God guys, hey, chill.
See, they just want to be in on the interview. That's all.
They do. Yeah. They're having a goofy time right now. They're playing with each other. But my grandfather, my Pepe Trapper, Just a second. Sorry about that.
No, it's
My Pepe Trapper, like I said, he played Andrew in some of the reenactments on some of the, I think, the TV interviews. So I do sense him sometimes. And my family's kind of had like a thing with Dimes and him. Mm-hmm. You know, wherever we've been thinking about him or, you know, talking about him, we've seemed to find a dime. Okay. And that symbolism a lot of families have, you know, a butterfly for other families and whatever. But for us, it's been Dimes. And every now and then I'll find like a rogue dime in the house and kind of get that feeling attached with it. Sometimes I just find a dime and I'm like, nothing. But other times I have that connection. And I will say actually too with this, When I got the job, I'd kind of gone down like a little bit of a YouTube rabbit hole finding, you know, other videos. And I found some YouTube group had used video footage of my grandfather and put it in their YouTube video. And it had like a million views on it.
Wow.
And like that was a really emotional moment there too, where I was like, my grandfather's been dead for almost 20 years and like last year, he's like famous.
That's cool. That's really cool.
And I remember that when I saw that kind of coming back to the house and having another layer to the feelings of it. When I came back, it was kind of like there was a little bit more warmth there again.
Yeah, absolutely. As it should.
Yeah.
As it should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can share I'll share a YouTube link of that too, or a screenshot or something so you can see my grandfather too.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool, man. I'll tell you. That was neat to see.
Yeah, please do. Yeah, send that link along as well. And we'll put that in the description of the show as well. Yeah, because it'd be really cool to see. So you've got the ghost tours going on, you've got the house tour that goes on, and you've got the ghost hunt, and all of these happen daily and nightly. So is it a 7 day a week deal, or when do you run these?
So we operate 7 days a week, overnight stays every single night. I think we have two holidays that we don't have overnight stays for. I think it's Thanksgiving and Christmas Day. But other than that, you know, every single day of the week, the ghost tours, especially during winter, because they're outdoor walking tours around the neighborhood.
Okay.
During the winter, we still do them, but it's like Friday and Saturday nights. That's it.
Okay.
The ghost hunts, again, during some of the slower seasons, we might only offer them a couple of nights a week. During our busier seasons from, you know, like July till end of November, we're doing them pretty much every night. But during the off seasons, we might drop those down to like three nights a week. But the house tours, every single day, the daily house tours, we do those every single day.
Okay. As we begin to wrap up here, Jared, what would people who have been to the Lizzie Borden house before expect new when they show up now? Is there something different that they would expect to see now than they would before?
I'm not sure. I think it's most a lot of the same stuff. You know, we didn't like go in and got everything out or anything like that. We kept a lot of the furniture. Actually, we kept all the furniture really, that was still left for us. You know, it's still the same wallpaper. It's still the same carpeting. You know, there's been some patchwork and some things. Like, we had a wall that was completely bulging. And again, I mean, it was over, you know, it's from the 1800s here.
Right.
So that stuff's going to happen. You know, we've repaired that. We have, I think one thing that we've changed is for guests who check in overnight, they use a door code. So there's a keypad on the door to enter and exit the house. You know, we have, you know, the ghost hunts and stuff. So I think be expecting that if that's something you're not into. You know, I would suggest maybe coming during like the off season or something like that. If you really don't want to participate in the paranormal, I'm sure your audiences are probably a little bit more open to that.
Yeah.
But there are some people who are not open-minded to that.
Okay.
So I don't think it's really like any major changes to expect. Anything that, you know, is, you know, catastrophic by any means either. So
yeah,
I don't think so. I don't think there's much different, really.
Okay, good, good, good. And let me ask you this. If people are interested in other things that U.S. Ghost Adventures is doing around the country, or maybe want to go on a tour closer to their area, where can they find U.S. Ghost Adventures?
Yeah, so we can book everything through our website, usghostadventures.com. Like I said, 60 different cities, so chances are we got something near you. And these are historically based ghost stories. You know, this is stuff that has been passed down generations and generations. So, you know, they're really cool. They're something for, you know, every single city out there. I'm sure that everyone has these stories, these legends that are passed down. We've had local writers, you know, write about them and, you know, kind of carry these on to audiences in 60 different cities. So, yeah, usghostadventures.com.
Cool. Very cool. Jared, I want to thank you so much for being with us today and letting us in on the newer adventures of the Lizzie Borden House. We wish you much success going forward with the house.
Hey, thanks so much. And hey, anytime you want to come by, come to Fall River. We're not too far away.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. I'd love to come by and see what you're doing with the place.
Yeah, come on down. We'll talk via email a little bit more.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Thank you so much, Jared. Folks, want to thank you so much for listening this week. Want to thank our sponsor, Microdose Gummies, and want you to check them out. By the way, you do get 30% off your first order and free shipping when you go to microdose.com and use the code DARKNESS. Want to remind you folks to take care of yourself and each other. Do something kind for someone out there this weekend. Doesn't matter what it is that you're doing. Reminder that there are people in Fort Myers, Florida who are still rebuilding, and people in Central Florida and in Northern Florida that are rebuilding from the hurricanes. Go out and help those people this weekend. There are people that need winter coats. Winter's coming, folks. It's cold out there. We just had Halloween, so people are out there that need warm clothing. They need coats. Find a local charity that is taking those coats and donate those coats this weekend. Just do something kind for your fellow man. A reminder just to leave it better than what you found it. Just do that for your friends here at Darkness Radio. For Beer City Bruiser, for Mally Fox, for Jess, I'm Tim Dennis. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you next week for the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.